League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is LiveMint.com, and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we're discussing is how MakeMyTrip.com is buying Ibibo Group's travel business for $720 million, and it'll end up creating the country's largest online travel firm. So what does this indicate for the overall travel business in India?
Yeah, I think it's more a merger than an acquisition, because the largest shareholder in Ibibo, which is South Africa's Naspers Group, becomes right. The largest shareholder in the combined entity after the merger. Extremely surprising. No one had any clue that this was happening, which is strange because Indians are notoriously bad at keeping secrets. And the number of people involved in this transaction would have been reasonably high, given that you had the Make My Trip people, the Ibibo people, and then the Naspers people, and then all the assorted bankers and the lawyers. I find it very strange that no one leaked this, but good. I mean, it means that we're finally becoming better at keeping secrets. The Indian travel space is extremely competitive, the online travel space. You have companies such as Make My Trip, Ibibo, you have Yatra, you have Cleartrip. Right. Profit margins are extremely low, which is why many of these guys have diversified into spaces like homestays and hotel stays and other things, anywhere where the profitability is a little higher. Many of these companies were offering huge discounts and were spending a significant amount of money on marketing to gain market share, usually at the expense of the other person involved. So it was what can be described as a bruising battle for market share. And I think that will come to an end, at least between these two guys. Because if you look at Make My Trip and Ibibo, these were two of the guys who were really going at each other. So I think there might be some stabilization in terms of discounting, in terms of aggressive marketing and all that. The deal obviously creates a very, very huge company. Together, I think they were doing around 35 million transactions last year. So it is going to be the behemoth in this space. It remains to be seen whether there are benefits of scale in this business, right? I'm not so sure. Mm. But clearly, some part of the business, yes, like hotels and all that, but I'm not so sure about travel. So it'd be interesting to see how that evolves. I don't foresee any integration issues. And of course, in the nascent Indian internet space, this is the biggest deal that's happened so far. So I think it's a vindication that the Indian internet space is happening, that there is money to be made out here. Right. And all you have to do is to stay on. Again, the last point I want to make is Make My Trip. I think this is a company that's been around forever, right? I mean, it was there at the time of the first internet boom and bust in India. It survived. It went for a NASDAQ listing. And now there's this merger that's happened. So I think extremely interesting and extremely heartening that they've been around for so long and continue to do well. Because it's always good to see a survivor sort of thriving, right?
I think it speaks a lot about Deep Kalra himself, who now becomes the group CEO.
Correct. I mean, I think he's emerged one of the sharpest and most successful entrepreneurs around in the travel space. And I think, like I said, I think it's a rare company that survives one boom and bust cycle.
Right.
And then manages to come out on top in the next cycle. And then Make My Trip has done just that.
So moving on, we go to the story on GST, and the differences in the GST council have sort of delayed a compromise on the GST rates, and basically the differences are...
I know everyone's been harping about the differences, but I think what many people are ignoring is the fact that there's been progress, right? I mean, I don't think there's going to be too much debate. I think that anyone who expected the rates to be finalized this week was living in la-la land. But the next meeting that is happening, which is happening in early November, is probably when the deal will get struck. There seems to be broad consensus in terms of at least directionally, there are some details that need to be worked out. So what do we know so far, approximately? Because we'll know the specifics only when the deal is struck. And I think the next meeting is on
third, right? And fourth.
Third and fourth?
Yeah.
So the first one is that it is going to be a tiered tax structure where you have 4% tax for gold, 6% for some other products, which are essential products, 12% and 18% for many of the other products, 26% for packaged consumer goods, and 26% plus a cess, which is a tax on a tax, and which is levied by the center on luxury products and sin products like tobacco and carbonated soft drinks and things like that. So it's a tiered structure. It's still not complex. I think many people made the mistake of assuming that GST would be one rate for all products.
Right.
Never going to be the case, right? So, but at least once you decide on these rates, it'll be the same rate for all these products across the country. So I think that is a significant simplification. So directionally, I think we know that it's going to be a tiered structure. Now, whether it's going to be 12% or 13%, whether it's going to be 18% or 19%, because these, like we reported, are some of the options that the government has offered them, we don't know. So that's the first thing that we know.
Right.
What's the second thing that we know? There have been reports in some quarters that this is going to be an inflationary tax. We've looked at the math that the government has done, and it doesn't look to be an inflationary tax. Net, net, I think things stay pretty much the same. So its impact at the consumer price level is going to be insignificant, if non-existent. That's how it looks at this point in time. What's the third thing that we know? The compensation for states on account of taxes that they could have levied, which the center will now have to give them, is likely to be around 50,000 crore in the first year. Now, the center has proposed that it get funds for this compensation through a new cess on luxury and sin products. The states are not sure about this. Mm. Some of the states are fine with this. Some of the states are not fine with this. So that's one sticky point. But I think directionally, a cess will be the way that they will go. And they'll probably end up doing that. So it's reasonably clear. Sure, it would have been a lot better if they had, at the end of the meeting on the 4th, if they'd come out and said, done, here's what's going to happen.
Mm.
But I have a feeling that that's what you'll probably hear on the 10th.
Right. Moving on, the next story is again about Flipkart, and they've come out with their new strategy of setting up offline stores, and probably it's aimed at targeting smaller cities where people have limited connectivity.
I think they're evaluating it. They've not decided. Mm. They're evaluating. It's not a bad idea at all. There are many markets in the world where Amazon does have these show-and-tell kind of centers. In some of them, you can actually buy. It helps. Amazon has something similar in India through one of their programs, especially in the smaller cities, in suburban, sub-rural kind of areas. It's not such a bad idea.
Right.
Will probably work. But I still think the bulk of their business will come online. Just makes sense. And I don't think we should ignore the branding power of things like this, right? I mean, if you have a Flipkart store and you have six of them in various parts of the city, I just think it adds to the branding.
Mm.
Could also serve as pickup centers. They have not said this,
but
could serve as pickup centers. Might not be a bad way to go. It's a lot of people might prefer that, right? Like, I mean, let's assume you order something and you have it delivered, and you usually have it delivered home, but you're going to be at work and you want it. Suppose there's a Flipkart store in Connaught Place, which is just around the corner from our office. You could just say, I'll pick it up there, right? So it's not such a bad idea.
Also, many folks are still comfortable, you know, shopping offline
and
going there.
Yeah, there's touch and feel, look and see, all those kind of things, right? I mean, it makes sense for all these people to understand what's happening, to look at it, especially if you're buying things like clothing and all that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to degenerate to the level that usual offline shopping is, right?
Mm.
Because I've seen some instances where people go to a store, especially if you're buying apparel, and then you say, like, I want to see this, I want to see this, I want to see this, I want to see this. That kind of thing is probably not going to happen, especially if you're making a high value purchase. Suppose you want to buy a refrigerator.
Yeah.
Makes sense to see it, right?
Mm.
And right now, what happens in many cases is people go and they look at these products in a store and then come back and order it online because they get it. So suppose you can actually go to the same company store, look at it, and then order it there, and then it comes home. Some people might like it.
We'll have to see how that goes. The last story is about India's largest data breach, which has just been detected and involving debit cards, and about, you know, 3.2 million cards have been involved in this. So it's a little
worrying.
Yeah.
It's extremely worrying. What worries me is the fact that this has been going on for 3-4 months now. There have been reports on this that have appeared sporadically in the media over the last 3 months at least. I'm told it happened in May. I'm told they found out in July. We are now in October. There's a preliminary report of the investigative agency, which is already in the forensic investigative agency or the forensic investigative company, right? Because it was appointed by all the people who were affected.
Right.
People who are most affected by this are obviously the customers and also the banks, because financially, and I think it's very important to make this point, there's no liability on customers. The entire liability is on banks. Mm. Because India has moved to two-factor authentication. And the Reserve Bank of India insists that with two-factor authentication, let's assume you see something strange happening in one of your accounts, you call up and tell the bank, the onus is on the bank to pay the money to you.
Mm.
So individuals are not going to lose any money, the banks lose money. But for individuals, I think the important point is identity theft, because the details of your name, probably your address, probably your phone number, probably your date of birth, some of your financial details, and that is worrying. How did this happen? The interesting thing is, as we pointed out in our report this morning, everyone says our systems are fine, right? So you have all the banks involved who are saying it didn't happen in our system. All of them are pointing to a network of ATMs that a third-party service provider was running for Yes Bank. Yes Bank, of course, says nothing wrong with our system. Maybe a problem with the third-party service provider. The third-party service provider is Hitachi Payment Services. And interestingly, the CEO of that company told us that the preliminary report shows that there was no problem in their thing also. So it's a mystery, right? But what we know is that it happened. It was malware, which affected the ATM, and that helped people get access to details of 3.2 million cards. The actual financial losses seem to have been much less. One of the people who's in charge told us that it could be in the region of 1.3 or 1.4 crore, which is not much, but obviously it could have been much higher. I hope this makes people more conscious about the various ways in which this information can be sourced by people who legitimately should not have access to it.
Mm.
Right? Because the banking system seems to be relatively safe. The card transactions online that you do are protected. Two-factor authentication, message coming to your mobile phone, all those things. But here you have malware which is affecting an ATM chain. And I don't know whether they are allegedly, because the ATM chain, the company that is managing the system says everything is fine. But this is what most people are saying. And I don't know whether we are secure enough in that area. So, and this is likely to be one of these battles, right? I mean, hackers are always likely to find a way in, and then the system becomes safer. Then hackers again find a way to break through whatever protective walls you have, and then the system becomes safe again. So I think it's worrying, because all of us transact significantly online. Everything has moved online. I guess we just have to be extremely careful about sharing information. In this country, everyone's worried about financial losses. Very few people are worried about the digital trail that you're leaving. Very few people are worried about the breach of privacy and other issues. We still don't have a privacy law that has been legislated.
Mm.
The Aadhaar legislation, of course, just happened. As a newsroom, we've been big supporters of Aadhaar. I think that's all right. You know, there are people who think the law is not strong enough, but I think since it's query-based, that's all right. But I worry about privacy in all other aspects. You shop in a store, you use your card, they'll ask you for your phone number. Why do they ask you for your phone number? Because they want to send you messages about the next discount that's happening. But they have details of they have your phone, they have your card details, they obviously have your name and other things, and it's there on their database. What privacy is there? Do they sign some sort of privacy agreement with you? Do you know what the terms of use are? No one knows. And we're all happy to share our mobile numbers with just about anyone. So I think we have to become extremely conscious about that.
I think overall as a country, we take these things very lightly, all these data breaches.
Yeah, because we're just worried about money, right? Yeah. As long as the money doesn't go, we're all right.
Yeah, because overall, I mean, everywhere globally, these data breaches are happening, and even hacking is happening.
And identity theft is a very real problem.
Yeah. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at Livemint on Twitter or Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.
Live. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.